accession number 23378, reel 2.
What was the feeling the night before in the drill hall when your CO gave you the, well, you listened together to Menzies' announcement?
Mouths were opened. Gee, we're there. And my mind flashed back to Friday night. I was having a drink in town with some of my friends, as you often did it on Friday night. And Poland was the issue then. Of course, they invaded Poland on the Friday. I remember going home and telling the old man and my mother what is Germany had invaded Poland. You see this look in their faces. They obviously thought, as they told me later, that such as my interest in the battalion, that I'd probably be caught up in the events which were to follow. So the apprehension started to enter the family household. The apprehension of a mother and father, I suppose. My elder brother John, already a major in the CMF and the artillery, was set to be caught up, and he was also in the practice. And I was also in the practice, which meant that my father would be bereft of two people.
Was there ever a thought that you would remain?
Never for the two of us, but the thought remained for my sister and second brother. They remained.
So you were out going back to Port Melbourne. You were out guarding oil
tanks, installations.
What was the feeling in relation to the distance that the war was at this point?
Well, the bizarre business of going to war in a tram down St Kilda Road and pitching tents inside Victoria Barracks, where the permanent soldiers were strutting around, complaining that we never saluted and we dirty and unkempt and so on. The seriousness with which we got off the trams and did that soon departed, because it was fun, nothing was happening. Nobody was worried about it at all. It was a great life, really, for about a month or so. And we used to get progress reports in the newspapers about what was happening. Of course, nothing much was happening over there. I think we were all touched by the phony war part of it earlier on.
What sort of propaganda were you subject to, do you think, in the early portion, while the phony war was on, I suppose?
The seriousness of it? You call it propaganda?
How you were affected by the attitudes of people, of the press, of possibly the radio.
Wireless.
The media of the time.
Yeah. Well, within my circle of friends and contacts and as I mentioned earlier, we were going to camp for increasing periods, finally for 3 months. And there was an interest in what was going on, and as the announcement was made in 1940 of the formation of a second AIF, things started to become really interesting. We're not affected by things. We're in this circle, being in the army, we knew that there had to be a solution to the problem of being created overseas, and any amount of propaganda would have washed off us. We were a group of people who had joined up and were there to do whatever fell our way.
You regard the period of September, from September 39 through to the middle of the following year, when there was this period of not much going on, what was the general feeling in relation to how you would be involved?
We felt that before the announcement about the second AIF, that we felt that we would be involved in some way or another as a unit, that we wouldn't be split up. And that made us develop an esprit de corps in the unit as such. We had contact with the people of the 1st 14th, the 1st AIF, who came to talk to us and so on. There was a fervour of war, but where and why and how was yet to be determined. And of course in May, when Hitler started to move through France and the 1st AIF, second AIF was being formed, then became the question of when you would join up. And there are only limited places, of course, in the 1st 6th Division. We were in camp at the time, in a 3-month camp, and we were operating as a unit with a good esprit de corps. So the thought of joining the 6th Division was not regarded as important, I suppose, under those special circumstances. It wasn't until the announcement of the 7th Division later on in the year, not much later, that the question of joining up became an important matter for the individual.
On the evacuation of the British and French forces from Dunkirk, what was the feeling in relation to the ease at which the Germans had come through, had broken resistance?
First I knew of it was when I was out at the family. I was still living at home. I remember being in the breakfast room listening to our wireless set, and the old man was there sitting in his armchair in front of a fire, and we heard Churchill make his famous speech, and scarcely a word was said amongst the family grouped around the set. This could have happened, and then and there I resolved that I would join.
Did you believe Churchill? Were you convinced by his...
Oh, absolutely. Magnificent speech, and I still do, despite what's happened in the years gone by. I can still remember that afternoon, or just after Sunday lunch, listening to it, and impressive. I was young then, of course, and pointed that way. But I suppose I was an easy prey to his beautiful language.
People talk of his great ability in word to convey his ideas and inspire people. From what you've said, I'd assume you'd agree with those things. In what ways do you think he was able to conjure up?
Well, he'd paint word pictures and use colourful language, but it was all in context. It was good English. And he had that booming voice, which oscillated. He had it all as an orator. Imagine going back to those ancient days of Caesar and Socrates and these ancient Greeks that had the way of talking to people in mass. He did that remarkably well. He was a good man for it at the times. All politicians have their downside and their upside, one way or another. But his only emerged, well, he had his downside first, didn't he? And then he came good during the war and then went down again. But he was good for the time.
In relation to the occasion, the Germans seemingly having the upper hand, what was the feeling in relation to the German threat to England now just across the Channel and what that might mean?
Linked to England as we were in thought and almost in word and indeed, it was a threat to Australia. Not immediate, a physical threat, not Germans coming out here invading Australia, but the mere fact that England was so close to disaster, we were close too. We had the idea that we would not be able to defend ourselves if the Germans then spread out like the Japanese did through Southeast Asia. We were threatened by that event.
Do you ever think that at any point, particularly around this time, that you thought the war might be over in a very short period of time, that the Germans would actually win?
Yep. As they say nowadays, that was an option.
How do you think people then took the situation in relation to the Second World War and England's position in it at that time, do you think?
Well, what was happening in England was happening in Australia in a way. Whilst there was great distance between us, geographically speaking, between England and Australia, nevertheless, the minds of people were far closer. And there was only certain sections of the community, I suppose, were again any alliance with Britain, still a mother country part of it.
In relation to the fact that you've been training, did you think that you were up to fighting an army such as the German army that had swept quite easily through Belgium and the Netherlands and into France?
No.
What sort of stage were you at, do you think, at this point?
We developed an understanding of minor tactics, There were no such things as tanks, anti-tank guns. There were only rifles and perhaps the odd machine gun. We were not equipped materially for war, but we were equipped in spirit. That was the development that took place by having 3 months' camps. A tradition was being developed. But as to material matters like field firing and ammunition and so on, it was, we were way behind. We never would have stood a chance looking back on it all if we were, had to be committed straight away. But the 6th Division, once they got overseas and started to train in the Middle East, soon, and were given the equipment, they soon knew how to use it. They soon developed the Australian tradition.
In June, it easily had declared war on the Allies. What was the feeling in relation to that?
Oh, hell. Not another possible nail in the coffin. Well, if they come in, we can beat them, all right. I'm speaking from my standpoint of my militia unit, not from the standpoint of the country generally.
So the Italians didn't
bother us. See, they had their experiences in Abyssinia where they went backwards and forwards.
So between this time and you sailing for the Middle East yourself, what took up the time? What were you involved with mainly?
3rd of December to September to...
From June 1940 on, through the time you were actually leaving October.
Yep. Well, 6th of May 1940, we marched into, as individuals, marched into the 2nd 14th Battalion, which was the only Victorian unit, infantry unit in the 7th Div. And we got up to Pakapanyal on a Saturday night, cold as buggery, and had the experience of meeting people for the first time. We were at Pakapanyal until October, when we sailed for the Middle East. We went through quite a deal of hard training. We developed a tradition based upon the 1st 14th, with their wonderful record of Gallipoli and France and Jack of EC. And there were frequent visits by them to us. And a special occasion was in July 1940, when they presented a battle flag to us, with their colours on it, and it was a treasured article in the unit. They did a lot for us the first 14th to give us the background of what they'd done. We resolved to carry it on. But their training was great in those days, Bucker. There was a personal matter which I may be of interest to, not the people in England perhaps, but to you personally. We've got final leave, 7 days final leave. And we came down to Melbourne and had a girlfriend called Pat Hamilton, a lady in there. We'd been taking each other out. In fact, we were. Her father was a doctor at Clifton Hill, GP, great fellow. He Pat went to Merton Hall, which is a school just along Melbourne Grammar, geographically. And he, in her younger days, she, it was on the cable tram that took her to into Melbourne to catch a another tram out to Clifton Hill, where her father had practiced. And I used to note her on the dubbing of the cable tram, and we got to talk as youngsters well. And that developed through university days. And we had a close association at the outbreak of war. Anyway, after final leave, we got back to Paco and we had a few days to go, and suddenly felt a tightening around the jaws. So I went to Don Duffy, who was a regimental medical officer, a great friend. I knew him in university days. And I said, Don, I've got tight around the jaws. He said, tight, he said. Let me feel. And he said, you've got mumps. I said, what's that mean? He said, well, you won't be able to go. I said, bugger that, Don, I'm going. He said, oh, I'd better tell the CEO. So he went down and saw George Cannon, and he said, Roden's got the mumps. What'll I do? And Cannon said, I haven't heard you. So Don then had to hatch a plan to get me onto the train in Pakapanirut, Dysart station there, up to Sydney, which we reached the next day, and it was a hot October day in Sydney. The troops were in shirts and shorts. I was in a greatcoat and a balaclava on to hide the swelling. We boarded the Aquitania late afternoon. We were due to sail in a couple of hours' time after boarding. I walked up the gangplank, the gangway. Troops in shirts and shorts, me and a balaclava. The shore person looked at me and said, what's wrong with you? I said, oh, I've just got a bit of shivers. And Don immediately put me in. The ship was equipped as a tourist ship at that time, hadn't been converted to a troop ship. The officers were four in a cabin, and Don immediately put me down there, and he said, I'll arrange for food to come to you. Get under the bed if anyone comes in that you don't know or hear about them coming. We had a steward looking after us from the Aquitania's team, an English bloke. And Don explained to him that I was not to be disturbed, and if anyone was coming, he used to let me know. He valued the Australian quid all right, and I was kept in that way, getting up and under the bed whenever an inspection came, until we quitted Fremantle, and they couldn't do anything with me, and by that time anyway the mumps was starting to clear up.
What was the feeling?
The first mail we got was at Fremantle. Pat said, darling, I've got the mumps. So if it was not for Don's ingenuity, I would have undoubtedly been caught up in the enlistment in the 8th Division with all those dreadful consequences.
What was the feeling, firstly, on the train on your way to Sydney, knowing that you were on your way, and if you got past all the stoppages possibly in relation to your illness, that you were going to be leading Australia to go away to fight?
Great excitement, great determination. It was a wonderful occasion for us because it's the culmination of all the training we'd done. Bit like the Australian test team, I suppose, going into a test match against England. We were there to do a job. We were really determined people. I remember my mother watching the troop train when I left Melbourne to go back for my final leave. She was out of the Essendon station. The train went through there and she was waving. I don't think she picked me out really. I was hanging out too, but I don't think she saw me. But it was a great emotional time. It's now we were representing Australia and what we were doing, and it was a big moment.
Were you at all allowing yourself to think about the reality that you may actually be wounded, that you may even not make it back?
No, I don't think we thought of that at all. We just thought of the immediate future and taking it day by day, as the football coaches say. No, it wasn't until we perhaps going up the Suez Canal that enemy planes might come over, and we heard the AKAC fire, that we really felt we were in a war zone. Up to the lane, it was enjoying life on board a big passengers liner.
Give us an idea of what that was like then.
Well, it carries a lot of people, the Aquitania, and a lot of people on board. It was the thrill of leaving Sydney Harbour, having a visit from the Governor-General, Lord Gowrie. I'm speaking generally, not personally. Him wishing everyone well, and sailing out of Sydney Harbour with boats hooting in the evening. Quite a sight, really, boats assembling. We sailed down to Bass Strait, where we picked up other ships, the Mauritania carrying other troops, and the whole convoy sailed around the Bight to Fremantle, where we picked up the 2nd 16th Battalion. So the our brigade, consisting of the 2nd 14th from Victoria, 16th from the West, and 2nd 27th from South Australia, strong state entities.
What was the sort of camaraderie between the three, do you think?
At first, nil. Bloody Western Australians, sand gropers, establishment South Australians, you know, conservatives, the mixture from Victoria. It wasn't until we got into our training areas in the Middle East that we came together as a great brigade.
What was the feeling on board, sailing across the Indian Ocean?
Period of boredom to period of interest and the few world news we got. It was made up of such training as you could do. There was a lot of downtime, but as we got closer to Bombay, we spent 7 days up the hill station called Dialali. The troops started to behave in normal Australian fashion, and discipline was hard to maintain.
What was the
But then we were decanted at Bombay into smaller regular troop ships. We were on the Dilwara, a British trooper. It was there that we realised that we were getting closer and closer to war zone when planes came over.